Whiskey is, for me, a very social thing. It's about moments and celebrating someone's life or celebrating an achievement or a particular occasion. And time is very, very linked to memory and also linked very, very much to your olfactory system. So when you nose a whiskey, it takes you back to a particular moment. So time is about celebrating the life of that cask, the moment that it's ready, and we believe that it's ready.
We are Miriam,
Martin,
and Manuel. We love Scotland, travelling and whisky.
On our trips, we talk to the people to bring their stories to you and to share our love for the water of life.
This is Inside Whisky, the Barrel Talk. Today, we're in Edinburgh, and we're talking to Jamie Morrison, the brand ambassador of the new independent bottler One Cask at a Time. Welcome to our podcast, Jamie.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much for joining us. Now, to start it off, on your Instagram profile, you claim that you take pictures of everything. What's the last thing you've taken a picture of?
Well, I have two dogs, and they tend to take up most of my photo library, to be honest. I think probably last night, actually, I took a picture of my American Akita Sansa lying on the couch looking somewhat regal whilst I was squished into the other side of the couch, sort of vying for space. So, yeah, mostly dogs.
Mostly dogs. And now, let's talk about yourself. Could you briefly, maybe apart from the dogs, introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. So, as you know, my name's Jamie Morrison, and it's been quite the journey for me over the past almost 11 years to becoming the ambassador for One Cask at a Time. I started in the whisky industry somewhat by accident, really. I had come out of university after sort of meandering my way through a teaching degree, and I happened to perchance meet the then general manager of Glenturret Distillery, famous Grouse Experience. So I started as a tour guide, and that's something that I fell in love with very quickly, meeting people from all over the world and sharing that lovely thing that brings us all together, well, as whisky. And I fell in love with the process, the intricacy, mm-hmm. the romanticism of it, and not to mention the taste and the flavour. So I quickly sort of gained a little bit more responsibility at Glenturret as a sort of assistant visitor centre manager, and found myself going out and about a little bit more in a sort of somewhat unofficial ambassadorial capacity. And when the company was taken over in 2019, there was an obvious need to grow the brand out with Scotland. So a brand ambassador was required. So I applied for that role, same as everybody else did. And thankfully, I was offered the role. And yeah, you make friends very quickly when you've got a bag full of whiskey around the world. So,
and here we are.
And here
it's
I
not
am.
A bad thing. Maybe that's also the moment when you joined Glenturret. But do you maybe recall a specific time when whiskey for you just turned from being a normal drink, I'd say, that turned it into a passion, and afterwards you turned it into a profession, obviously?
So I think one of the most memorable points was going into a warehouse for the first time and standing in that warehouse that hopefully some people who are listening in or have had that experience, I know we all have, it really brings it to life for you, and it kind of does something to you. That atmosphere, standing in that warehouse surrounded by wonderful maturing whiskey and the smells and the sights, and it really brings it to life. And I think it becomes much more than something you pour from a bottle. It really gets inside you, I think, and you think about the time element of it and what's happened in the world. These whiskey casks have just been sitting quietly waiting for their moment. And I think that's probably when it became something that I wanted to do for hopefully the rest of my life.
Lovely.
Yeah. So, and you mentioned before that you have a degree in education, and I read you also have a degree in Spanish. So the things that you learned during getting these degrees, being in education, in how far do they help you in your role that you have today as a brand ambassador?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the correlation between education and whiskey is huge. And as part of an ambassador's role, it is fundamentally about education. Mm-hmm. I often joke that the children are often better behaved than the adults. Not always, but sometimes.
It depends on how many whiskies they have.
This is very true. But I think the education piece is hugely fundamental to our industry. And that allows you to engage with people. And I think mm-hmm. when you've learned the skills of how to engage with a room and how to communicate with people, it really does help you along the way. So I'm quite lucky, I guess, that if you give me a slot to have a chat, the problem will be getting me to be quiet, I think. But yeah, I think it's helped a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And we already said you worked for Edrington Group, Glenturret, then you pursued freelancing. Now you joined One Cask at a Time fairly recently. What excites you about the project One Cask at a Time?
Oh, where would you like me to start?
wherever you want.
I think one of the most exciting things about One Cask at a Time and the level we're at now, or the stage we're at in the journey, should I say, is that I can get involved with lots of different elements of the brand. So it's not just me having a collection of bottles and talking about those bottles. It's being involved in cask selection. It's mm-hmm. looking at tasting notes. It's thinking about the brand tone of voice. What does the color scheme look like? And that's before you think about going out and about to events and spreading that good word out there. So for me, it's hugely exciting to get involved at the stage the brand's at and help to shape that going forward, hopefully. Mm-hmm.
We're really happy to talk to someone at this stage of an independent bottler, because you don't always get to talk about this early setup, how to establish yourself and in how far does your experience in the industry prior to that project help you now at that certain stage to establish yourself as an independent bottler?
Yep, absolutely. It's a really interesting stage because as an independent bottler, we have access to a myriad of different things. So we can almost target specific sectors of the market with different products. And for me, being involved in that process from the ground up is hugely beneficial. I think having the experience of going out and speaking about a brand does help a lot. And the fact that we work in such a collaborative and passionate industry, because you make connections really kind of long term in this industry. Mm-hmm. So that's great to be able to go out and speak to people about One Cask at a Time, who I've got an existing relationship with, or where I can perhaps look to grow the brand in different areas where we don't have a presence yet.
And now, focusing on the independent bottling, is that a benefit being an independent bottler because you can do other things that distilleries per se can't do?
So I think an independent bottler has a great opportunity to showcase spirit from a myriad of different distilleries. And it gives you a lot of creative freedom in what you can do. I often refer to the whiskies as like children for me. So, you know, your children are all different. They're not all coming from the same place. So I think the ability to speak about different brands also helps my knowledge level too. Mm-hmm. So my ability to talk about different distilleries and different types of woods and what the effects are is really beneficial for the consumer because it allows us to have a range of products that they can look at and enjoy. It's not just one single distillery, which I think is really good.
That's true. And before we talk about the bottlings that you have, maybe let's stay with the independent bottling. So when introducing a young independent bottler, choosing where to focus is really, really important. So how do you choose your markets? Which markets are you in currently? Which do you want to get into?
So in terms of what markets we're available in at the moment as One Cask at a Time, it's domestic UK at mm-hmm. the moment, having only launched in September last year. So we want to get a good stronghold in the UK, working with both on-trade partners and some specialist retailers, as well as through our website. Markets that we are considering looking at in the future and hoping to get into, Germany being one of them, a hugely interested consumer mm-hmm. And a great opportunity. And also I love spending time in Germany, so that's good for me. And at the moment, One of the other places that we're looking at is the UAE as a potential market. It's something one of our co-founders is lives over there. So for him, it does make sense for us to try and get into the market. Highly competitive, same as everywhere else. But we believe we've got a real USP in our products. So that's kind of where we're aiming for at the moment. And who knows what the future will bring.
And how do you get into a market? So let's take Germany as an example. What do you do? How do you, who do you approach? Where do you start? Because I cannot imagine how I would start. I don't know.
I think my approach so far has been to utilize some of the existing connections that I have in the market. So it's going to speak to a certain importer slash distributor personnel and seeing if there's an opportunity to add one cask at a time into their portfolio of mm-hmm. existing brands. I think also we have to be conscious of the fact that, as the name suggests, we are releasing single cask. Yeah. So by its very nature is somewhat limited. So we don't want to get lost in a portfolio. So it's trying to target partners who have that understanding of that what we do mm-hmm. is going to be limited. And then I guess going to events and striking up conversations and trying to build relationships that way is also mm-hmm. really helpful. And yeah, I think as we go forward, the more we go out and get the liquid on people's lips, which in my opinion is hugely important, it does help. If a consumer is going into their retailer asking for a brand that isn't available in the retailer, that will also stimulate discussion, hopefully, for us. So yeah, I think that's my strategy at the moment.
Yeah, sounds good. And before you can do all that, of course, every company, or also one cask at a time, in this case as an independent bottler, needs to sense there's something that is still missing in the market, there's space for another independent bottler. So what's the niche you're trying to find or you're going to step your foot into?
So I think, firstly, I believe that there is still room for everyone in the field. Mm-hmm. And what makes independent bottling particularly interesting is that everybody's doing something different. Mm-hmm. Different price points, different age statements, different styles. So I think we're looking to do quality rather than quantity. Mm-hmm. Also, with the three ranges that we have, it's about potential different overlap as well, but different audience, I think. Mm-hmm. It's looking at, you know, perhaps somebody who is coming into the single cask world. So maybe doesn't have much experience of it before. And then looking towards some of our older age statement in the grandfather series, I would say that that's for somebody's looking at maybe something as an investment to buy a bottle of whiskey and keep it for that special occasion or something. So in terms of niche, I think it should be about people who understand the idea of time being that element that you require in whiskey production. And showcasing that at different points within a range of whiskey. And obviously people who appreciate single cask mm-hmm. and cask strength is always good. Yep. So, yeah.
And Germany is a huge market for that, I suppose. We love our cask strength whiskey. So you should really look into that, as you are already, I know. And now looking at one cask at a time as a brand, can you reveal or tell us who's behind one cask at a time? It's not just you, I suppose.
No, it's not just me. We are a very small team. There's myself and our head of brand. We are owned by the UK's longest standing whiskey broker, who are VCL Vintners, who are based in London. But One Cask at a Time is a separate entity, if you like. We source casks from directly from distilleries, from lots of different places, yep. really. And for us, it's not just based on price, that decision. It's all about what does a cask say to us? What do we think? Why is that a special cask? And yeah, we're very lucky to be owned by VCL in a way, because it allows us access to lots and lots of different mm-hmm. casks, which the consumer may never see in any other way. So for us, it's a great position to be in.
It sounds just like it. And we also seen online, because I think you joined in September 2025, but just before there was a huge launch event also for the independent bottling. So is there still stories about it? How did that go about?
So Unfortunately, I wasn't at the launch. I joined in November.
Slightly too late.
It's a story of my life. but yeah, the launch, from what I understand and the feedback we've had, was hugely successful. And I think one of the interesting, most interesting points for me was everybody who attended the launch had the opportunity to taste two samples of what would then become, based on which one was seen as the most popular, would then become the next bottling.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is quite interesting. And that bottling is imminent, shall we say. but yeah, we've had quite a bit of fun since November. And here we are in sort of almost the end of February. And I'm like, oh, okay, a few months have passed. Okay.
Time
flies. So it's been busy, which is good.
Oh, that's good to hear. And are there any events you intend to do in the next coming months?
Yeah, we've worked out a plan for some UK appearances over the next few months. So next Saturday, for example, I'm going to the Fife Whiskey Festival, which should be fun. I've not attended that, but I know the organisers, so I'm looking forward to that one. And then further down the line in the UK, we're looking to have a good presence at the Indie Festival in Newcastle. And there's a couple of other events that are in the calendar, as well as some tastings here and there. So it'll be a busy year for me, which is good.
Sounds pretty busy.
And you also mentioned before the recording that you're also having a few events outside of the UK. So you're going to some trade fairs and so on. Where can people meet you there?
Well, so far we've booked to attend and speak to some importer, distributor, some people in the market at Limburg Whiskey Festival, mm-hmm. which is near the end of April. Mm-hmm. So I'm very much looking forward to that. We may have some interesting things in my backpack for people to have a little try of. So yeah, it's just about getting out there and speaking to people. And the more we do that, the more we can hopefully see success coming through the brand.
That's absolutely lovely. And you already mentioned it. People are getting to see you and the brand, and you need to get the liquid on people's lips. So what do you have in your backpack, or what are the bottlings? Maybe let's talk about what you can offer.
Sure. So we launched with a series of bottlings in September 2025. So our range is split into three, if you like. Mm-hmm. So the Chronograph collection, which are looking at different types of finish or different types of cask, perhaps more earlier matured whiskey. So we had a Ben Nevis, 11 years old, which we recently sold out of, which was great news. And we also have an Ochroisk, 13 years old, which is almost exclusively matured in a Madeira cask, which is
interesting.
Delicious. From there, we have a Pendulum collection, as in the pendulum of a clock. Tends to be more distillery character led, slightly higher age statements. So in there, we've got one bottling at the moment, which is an Ochentoshan, 26-year-old, which is, I love Ochentoshan. I believe it's somewhat underrated. So to see a single cask bottling at 59% ABV and 26-year-old is incredible. And then, of course, the grandfather sitting proudly in the corner, having seen life go and come. We've got a 30-year-old Lichig, 27-year-old Highland Park, which I am a confessed peat lover. So for me, when I realised that was in the fold, I was delighted. And we do have something coming relatively soon, which I won't give everything away, but it is a Oloroso sherry cask. It is an island whiskey. And it has a good age statement attached to it. So watch this space.
Okay. So we're
looking
going to
watch.
We'll keep our eyes open. And you just mentioned it, the names, Chronograph, Pendulum, Grandfather. It's all like somehow related to time and age. So how did you come up with that? What's the story behind this?
So I think the story behind it would be whiskey is, for me, a very social thing. It's about moments and celebrating someone's life or celebrating an achievement or a particular occasion. And time is very, very linked to memory and also linked very, very much to your olfactory system. So when you nose a whiskey, it takes you back to a particular moment. So time is about celebrating the life of that cask, the moment that it's ready. And we believe that it's ready. So time is hugely important, but it's also, I think, a considering factor that probably some whiskey consumers don't necessarily think about. Time is something that you can't repeat as much as we would all like to sometimes. And that element fits in really nicely to the idea of being a single cask. It's a moment in time. It's unrepeatable. There may be many like it, but there will never be another one exactly the same. And that's hugely exciting for us to be able to showcase to the consumer.
And then there comes memory, because if I try one of the bottlings now and then I like it and then I cannot get it, I will maybe in 5 years think, oh, look, I was in Edinburgh and I just tried it, but yeah, it's gone. And let's maybe talk about flavor profile a little bit. That's not too easy when you're an independent bottler, but is there something that you're always looking for, like one thing that all of these bottlings have in terms of flavor, something that they need?
So I think from my perspective, what I'm looking for when we're selecting casks is a unique point. So that could be a particular flavor that's common from the distillery character, or it could be something quite interesting that has been shaped by being in the cask. So I think looking for elements of flavor from different styles of cask is really interesting at the moment. There's lots of different options for what you can do these days. And in terms of what they all have in common is quality, is a defining character, I would say. But as we all know, each distillery produces very different styles. And I think a celebration of their uniqueness is the key point. So I don't think there's anything particular that links them all together in flavour. They're all sort of expressing their own identity. And I think as a celebration of that is something that's the special point.
But let's pick one of them then. Let's pick a grandfather. The three of us, we love the Isle of Mull. So let's talk about the Ledgeig that you have.
Okay.
How would you describe that one?
So I think
you said you're a peat lover, so I'm picking the Ledgeig.
Yes, no, I absolutely adore it. So to have a 30-year-old single cask Ledgeig is incredible. It's, for me, the smoke has sort of tempered itself down a little bit on the nose. So you get a really nice, light, fruity character coming through. It's actually quite floral, which is quite interesting. And then the smoke is almost like across the street from you. It's not quite in your glass. I mean, you can nose it. It's there, but it's not the defining character. And I think on your palate, it just becomes alive. It's almost like that ashy, sort of subtle, meandering smoke that's there, but it comes and goes, it dissipates, then it comes back. The finish is arguably one of the longest finishes I've had from the range so far. And it just kind of sits with you. It's very contemplating peat smoke. So yeah, I am a big fan of that.
Sounds fantastic.
Everyone at home is salivating.
Yeah, and also it's so interesting because you mentioned that with this bottling, like what happens to peat after so many years, because it's not like this heavy peat that is just the only thing that you taste, but there's so much more to it then.
Yeah, it's, I think we have to consider the complexity of it after that, you know, so many years in a cask, 30 years in a cask, you know. It's took its time to to show itself in different
ways.
Coming
back to the time topic.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's something that develops over time and it can take you to a different place, I think. I mean, I'm enjoying a really good fiction book at the moment. And for me, sitting with a little dram of the Ledgeig 30, even when it's pouring with rain outside, just contemplating and enjoying the book, taking your time over it. And that's a moment in itself, right?
I can see that. Are you also involved in picking that right time, that right moment for the bottling? So when you're sitting at home having a book, having maybe a sample of it, and you're like, oh, that's ready now.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm incredibly lucky. Because we are a small team, we bring in, we are different hats, if you like. So the ability to have and draw samples from different casks and sit and look at, well, what do we think about this one? Do we think it needs some more time, or could we do something interesting in terms of a finish, is a really lucky position to be in. And I think before we choose a bottling, we probably, I mean, if the Auchentoshan 26 is anything to go by, we looked at almost 30 samples before we decided on that one. So having that ability to shape what the bottlings are and what they look like is an incredible privilege.
Yeah.
It sounds like a fantastic job, but at the same time, I imagine it to be so difficult to really, between these 30 samples, to say like, yeah, that's the one.
I think what I've learned is that it's sometimes you have to remove your own personal choices from it. And that's quite difficult because if you are, as I said earlier, a lover of peat, you're automatically going to say, well, I like that one because it's peated. And I think when you're looking at something as a commercial release, you almost have to take a step back and
what's
say,
what's going to sell?
Yeah, it doesn't really matter if I don't like it. Obviously, I like all of our bottlings, of course, but I think slightly removing yourself from it is probably a good thing, a relative degree of impartiality.
And apart from the taste, there's something special about your bottles, and we read about a bottle passport. So what's that about?
Well, it's a lot more fun than your regular passport, that's what I'll say. Each bottle from one cask at a time has an NFC chip in the label. So similar to how you would use Apple or Google Pay, you can download our app one cask at a time, and you can then scan the NFC chip with your phone. And what that'll do is firstly, it'll authenticate the bottle to make sure that that's not counterfeited or a forgery. Of course, with all the bottles being numbered, that's quite important. And then it will take you to a landing page where you'll get a little bit more information about cask. There's some video content in there, some tasting notes, etc. And the app is in development continually. So we want to look at what else can we do with it. But at the moment, we're finding that people are adding the bottles to their collection, and that's your bottle passport.
Which is virtual collection.
Absolutely. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So transparency is a thing that is like a core identity of your brand, I suppose.
Yeah, I think transparency is absolutely key to what we do. We all know, the consumer is much more attuned to what we do as an industry. And we're all consumers ourselves. So I think we value transparency. So I think when you see that coming from a brand, it gives you confidence in what they're doing. Yep. Transparency is a huge factor.
Yeah, so that is the thing I really like. And I think a lot of people are going to resonate with that, I suppose. And another thing on your website, because we think responsibility with nature is something that really more brands should look into. I've seen that. What's it called? It's called One Tree at a Time, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Yeah, what's that about?
So every bottle that we sell, we will plant a tree. And it's a really interesting way to almost give something back. And I think the fact that people can say, hey, by purchasing a bottle from one cask at a time, I am doing something. I'm not just buying a bottle, I'm planting a tree.
Yeah.
Which is pretty nice. And I think we're at a significant number of trees right now, which is pretty cool. I think it's nice for people to be able to have that thought in their head that they've done something, something positive as well.
Yeah. And it's nice because you always need a tree to build a cask, or
totally.
More than one, so you can give that back.
Kind of. It's almost like the full circle in some ways, right? Which is a really nice thing to be involved in.
And where are those trees planted? Are they planted here in Scotland?
As far as I'm aware, they're in several different locations. There will be some in Scotland, but there'll be some out with Scotland as well.
Okay. So maybe when we're looking at the casks again. So you already said selecting casks is a thing. So what you're doing is you are selecting the casks. You're not buying new mixed spirit. You're getting casks in.
So at the moment, we are working, as I say, with several distilleries to source casks of aged stock, usually. But that's not to say that we might not purchase new make and lay it down for some time in the future. We're also working with a couple of cooperages to look at different types of maturation. So, for example, will we take a cask and change the ends and create some influence from the new ends? Will we do a re-rack so that we can look to gain flavour from a different type of cask? So I think all options are open at the moment. And
is there a cask you want to see? A cask type?
I am a fan of wine casks. So we've We've already had a foray into that with the Madeira, which is a fine example. I do like a red wine cask. So I have been looking for the opportunity to do something with a wine cask, but as of yet, we haven't found the one that we want yet.
And you said it before that cask sourcing is also competitive sometimes. So how do you make sure you get the cask that you actually want?
So I think it's working with the right people and ensuring that we understand where that cask has been, the journey it's been on, to get to the point where we are looking to bring it into our operation. Making sure that you get the right cask is a very subjective thing, I think. So it's about passing a sample between the two or three of us in the team and thinking, well, this is, for example, if we have two or three samples of different cask, sister casks or whatever, it's about choosing the one that we think is the right one for us. And that comes down very much to our own opinion.
Yeah. And I always imagine that it is a hard decision either to pick a cask and then also to choose which distillery or which distillate is going into that cask or which distillate you want to have accompanied by that cask. So is there any distillery or spirit that you're actually trying to get into your portfolio? Or you'd also say that this is one that we really want to showcase to the markets that we are going into. So for example, Germany or UK.
So I think everybody has that almost personal, let's say, preference.
Yeah. I'd bottle only Lagavulin.
Well, there we go. We need to become more friends then. Yeah, I think everybody has their own sort of personal preference. For me, I love and, you know, have always been an advocate of Laphroaig. So I would love to see a Laphroaig single cask as part of our range. But there's a different time and a place for all whiskey. So I think having a broad range of whiskey for people to look at in our ranges is always a positive thing. And I think for different markets, it's good to look at different opportunities mm-hmm. as well. You know, some markets are more peat averse than others. Some markets prefer a more sherry driven whiskey. I think having a broad range within your ability to release whiskey is always a positive thing. You shouldn't put all your proverbial eggs in one basket, I don't think.
Yeah, I can see that. And you already touched upon maybe imminent releases, but can you reveal to the listeners maybe which releases you're going to have in the future? Are there a lot of bottlings to come in 2026, or what can they expect?
So I think what you can expect from us at One Cask at a Time is a continued curated release plan. So at the moment, we've worked a plan together for 2026 so that we'll be hopefully by the end of the year. I mean, don't hold me to this, but I believe we're looking at between sort of four and six new releases. And again, that might be pushed into 2027, depends how we get on. But certainly at the moment, I've been thoroughly enjoying looking at all the potential samples and what we can do with those. And what I will say without sort of giving the game away, if you like, is that there's some pretty interesting stuff that we're going to be able to get out there into the consumer's hand, which I'm always delighted by.
So looking ahead now into the year 2026, what would be your and the company's One Cask at a Time's biggest wish for the year?
So I think for 2026, it's still very, very much about brand growth and engagement with the consumer. As a young brand in a very competitive market, it's about us getting out there, speaking to people and letting people try what we do, building strategic relationships with retail and on-trade is important as well. But for me, I think by the end of 2026, I would see a successful year if we've managed to increase our throughput in sales a little bit. But at the same time, we've had appearance at significant events and we've built more of a following and more of a relationship with the people who are enjoying our whiskey. That's a big point for me.
We'll keep our fingers crossed and we'll spread the word, of course.
Thank you very much.
So we always end our podcast actually with three quick questions. So I hope you're ready because here's the first one. What's the most unusual tasting note that you have ever had in a whiskey, for example, now when tasting the samples?
The most unusual tasting note. That's a difficult one. Probably baby powder. Which was, I was not 100% convinced it was coming from the glass at first. but the more I nosed it, I mean, it does remind me of baby powder, that sort of light perfumed, sort of soft character that I, for some reason, associated with baby powder. So,
how does baby powder taste?
I've never tasted it.
Milky?
I'm thinking more like talc.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like light and quite sort of a very appealing smell, but one that I would not have expected to come from a sample of whiskey. But not in a negative way, just it took me by surprise.
Just unusual.
Yes.
Maybe stepping away from the baby powder taste, hopefully. So you call yourself a foodie. Any restaurant recommendations in Edinburgh for us when we visit the next time?
So one of my favourite places in Edinburgh is a place called Tanjore, which is a South Indian restaurant on South Clark Street, I think.
We don't know the streets anyway.
It's across the bridge, across Northbridge. And they do wonderful dosa, which is a very thin sort of crepe with things inside it and some chutneys. And oh, it's delicious. The last time I was there, you could also take your own bottle of beer, which was incredibly welcome. and other than that, I would say Topo La Bamba in a, I can't remember the name of the street, but it's a Mexican restaurant and it's quite a big advocate of that as well.
Noted for next visit.
We'll check that out. Now, if you could select one whiskey to be bottled out of every cask there is, which one would it be and why? And in a second question, which of your portfolio would you bottle without revealing too much?
Wow. Okay. so if it's any cask from anywhere, I would like to see, we're talking about not necessarily just Scotch, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I would like to see Indian whiskey, something like a Paul John or a Rampur, for example.
But Peaty.
Yes, 100%. I would like to see something from there. And the second part of your question
was of the casks you sample or of that you've tried that is, I suppose, a little realistic to be bottled soon or soonish.
We've looked at a few samples of non-peated whiskey that has been matured in an ex-peated cask.
Oh, wow.
Which is quite interesting. And who knows whether that will become a thing for us at one cask at a time or not. But yeah, I think that's probably what I would say.
You're doing a great job keeping us curious.
I tried my best.
So thank you very much, Jamie. That was already it. And if you want to find out more about One Cask at a Time, follow them on social media at One Cask at a Time. Visit their website, onecaskatatime.com, or find Jamie at the trade fairs and whiskey festivals very soon.
Thank you very much.
It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you.
We are Miriam and Manuel, and this was Inside Whiskey with Jamie Morrison of One Cask at a Time. Thank you for joining us on the Barrel Talk today. If you enjoyed this episode, tune in again next time for some more tales about the water of life. And in the meantime, follow us on Instagram at @inside_whiskey, on Facebook at Inside Whiskey, The Barrel Talk, or visit our website on insidewhiskey.de. This was Inside Whiskey, The Barrel Talk.